Mini episode 1607 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1607. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you. And we have with us here today one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our FDH NBA analyst Ben Chu, coming in for a preview of the 2023 NBA playoffs. And as we have been saying for probably at least the last 2 years or so, this is a very, very interesting time in the NBA. You have some of the older powers and older players, great players like LeBron and some of the others who are still kind of hanging in there to whatever degree, but you have the up-and-coming powers coming onto the scene, and it's a very interesting time of convergence. I mean, conceivably, you could probably make the case for about 8 or 9 teams total in the finals this year, which is definitely not the case most years, and it's much more inscrutable, shall we say, looking at particularly the Western Conference, when you see a team like Phoenix, which is so much better on paper than what their seeding is, because we haven't gotten a chance to see Kevin Durant play with the Phoenix core that much, but we can all imagine what they are capable of. So all that and much, much more to get into with my friend, the great Ben Chu. Ben, great to have you on, buddy.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it, as always.
And we got quite a scene to look forward to here in the playoffs, from the play-in games moving forward here all the way through. And just on a macro level, the kind of playoff picture that we are generally not used to seeing, because you have some series that, you know, in the first round, maybe a first round series in both conferences, it might be a little bit more up for grabs than usual. In the NBA, you're kind of lucky if you get one or two at the most per conference that could be super competitive in the first round. But you do have the potential for better than that in both conferences. And then from the semifinals on, the conference semifinals, it should just be complete and utter wars all the way through. And that's not always the case.
Right. And I think this is one of the very few years. I think it might even date back to like some of the years during the Spurs-Pistons finals where the top teams in the Western Conference were all kind of bunched together. And even the same thing with the East, even though Milwaukee kind of ran away with that for a while. It just seems to be a lot of parity. There seems to be a lot of teams that have the capability to win an NBA championship. But there also seems like it's one of those, I would say, like sort of years that there are a lot of teams competing. But at the same point, too, there's only X amount of teams, like I would say 4 or 5. That we could legitimately see a title.
Yeah, I would kind of tend to agree with that. And you look at it a certain way here. Of course, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, it is our 2023 FDH NBA end of regular season breakdown. And this is just a very interesting thing, along with the standings, that just kind of shows you the degree to which, quite frankly, some things can be lagging indicators. So not to undermine this whole thing here, but you have the numbers, and they are a useful guide, but they don't tell you the whole story. Of course, Phoenix is tied for 10th on the stat for the year, but you can throw that out the window because very little of that was measurable with Kevin Durant in the lineup. Also, the team all by itself on the first tier, the Boston Celtics, that appears to be somewhat of a lagging indicator because they did start the year at sort of a historically hot pace, especially offensively, and it still shows up in the numbers. They constitute a first tier all to themselves here, but they're not even the consensus favorite in the Eastern Conference. Most people would probably peg Milwaukee as being that at this point. So you have a Boston team, which, again, is a statistical darling. Out of all of the categories that we have here, our FDH power rankings, SRS, offensive rating, defensive rating, EFG, TS percentage, assist to turnover ratio, 3-point percentage, and margin of victory. The only one where Boston is outside of the top five is 3-point shooting, and they are sixth in that. The only one where they are as low as fifth is EFG and TS percentage. So Boston is pretty dominant on paper when you look at our statistic here. But I think this is one of those cases where, much like Phoenix on the negative end with their number, the positive end for Boston doesn't tell the whole story of where they're at right now.
Right, and I think the major thing, too, is that, especially with a lot of statistics, there always can be lagging indicators, and Boston has gone through sort of its little late-season swoon a little bit, playing well, but not up to the pace that they were before, and then that was how Milwaukee was able to overtake them to get the overall number one seed. And Phoenix, I mean, you make a big trade for Kevin Durant during the trade deadline, and he then gets injured for about, I believe, if I'm correct off the top of my head, around 8 to 12 games. So we kind of know that Phoenix with Durant's going to be a great team, but again, we've seen this too, Rick. The first year for any superstar in a new location, there's always a learning curve. There's always going to be situations where they're not, the offense is not going to run, is not going to hum as quickly as it should. But we'll see. It seems a little more wide open this year than in years past, because we've discussed this at least in the last 2 to 3 years. There's been a lot more parity in terms of who we think are going to win the finals coming off of the years where it was pretty much just Golden State, Cleveland.
Yes. Absolutely, and it has been very wide open. And the last 3 years, with six different teams making the finals, that is the first time since 1976 to 1978 that we've seen that in the NBA. So it very well could extend yet again here with that. Of course, 1979, you saw some continuity with Seattle and Washington in the back-to-back there. And interestingly enough, some might think that if we have this broken, that it could be this time around, that it could be a rematch, but from 2 years ago with Milwaukee and Phoenix. That might seem to be the biggest consensus out there as far as if we get some of the same teams in the mix. But in the Eastern Conference, you have Milwaukee, which seems to have supplanted Boston as the kind of consensus favorite here at this point. You have Philadelphia, who some people think is maybe the third team in the mix capable of this. I maintain, again, and I think I've had a pretty good record of seeing things clearly, notwithstanding the fact they are my favorite team. Cleveland Cavaliers, the 4 seed, a team I picked to be the 4 seed prior to the season. I think they have at least a puncher's chance in this mix. You're going to have probably them against Milwaukee in the second round, I would guess, and we'll talk a little bit more about Cleveland's first round in a second here, but when people are looking at 4 teams that have a chance to make it out of the East, I think it comes down to Milwaukee and Boston, and I kind of give Philly and Cleveland almost an equal chance behind them.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one team that we could also probably throw into the mix as well would be the Knicks. I know a lot of people are not talking about New York at this time, but I do feel like if they can go on a little bit of a mini run, and then we saw what Jalen Brunson has been able to do with that team, and they still have a lot of solid talent behind it with RJ Barrett and Julius Randle. So I wouldn't say that they're a dark horse, but it's more in terms of like they definitely have the talent to keep up with the top 4 in the Eastern Conference at the moment.
Well, as far as the first round series with Cleveland, this is one of these things where the Cavs are somewhat of a statistical darling. New York, not so much. There's actually a pretty wide gap between them on our statistical index, which is interesting because I have watched as frustration with frustration as the Cavs have struggled with the Knicks in the games that they have played this year. But New York with some real statistical holes here, 18th in defensive rating, 20th in EFG, 20th in TS percentage, and 22nd in assist to turnover ratio, 19th in 3-point percentage. So New York has consistently sort of outpaced the metrics during the course of the season. But you get into the smaller sample size of a shorter series, and me thinks that's where it could really catch up to them against a team like the Cavs, who are number 1 in defensive rating.
Right. And I mean, the real thing, too, is that just in general is that the Cavs statistically, based off of their net rating and their offense rating and their defensive rating, are all just perceptionally, based on the math, they should be a much better team than they are just based off of their standings. But again, it's hard to tell how you value the NBA regular season, how you value statistics sometimes, because the statistics can tell you that, like you said, Rick, Boston is probably one of the overall number, you know, top teams, but then most people would say in the last 20 games, they haven't really looked like that dominant of a force.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then I know in the conference quarterfinals here in the East, I know that you have said to me off air that you feel like Philly and Brooklyn could maybe be a little bit more competitive than some people might think.
Yes, correct. And I think, too, is that the big thing if we're looking at Brooklyn is going to be how guys like Mikal Bridges and Cameron Johnson and Nicholas Claxton and, you know, and how Spencer Dinwiddie plays. Because people tend to forget that Nets team isn't great, but they're very solid. So I don't think they'll beat Philly, but they have the opportunity to at least cause some problems for Philly in the first round.
Yeah, they're like some of the older school Cavs teams from the 90s. Some of the Cavs teams that was like the best player was just like a good to decently pretty good player, like well above average. But they had like a couple of those guys, right? And it was a thing where it was like, what's the ceiling of a team like this? Was I always saw as a Cavs fan, not that deep into the playoffs. And that's what Brooklyn kind of reminds me of at this point. Because again, you know, if Dinwiddie's your best player, then, you know, probably theoretically you're not going that far. But I mean, he is a good to really good player. And they have some a lot of guys like that on that team there. It's an interesting mix for them post-trades.
Right, and again, their whole series will be dependent on if Mikal Bridges can essentially become that sort of 1A guy for them. And again, and the bigger thing for them is just their depth, because people tend to forget that team, they have a lot of good guys right behind them. You got Seth Curry, you got Joe Harris, you got Yuta Watanabe. So, you know, they're more of a they're not a star-laden team, but they're one of those teams I feel like they get a little bit undervalued going into the playoffs, and they could make it into a series. I'm not saying that Philly's going to lose to them, but I do think Philly is going to have a little bit of a harder time with them than, let's say, you know, the Miami Heat.
They could push them, no question about that. And I have to say also, too, just in terms of my own accountability, looking at the Eastern Conference, speaking of New York area teams, when we were doing our stretch run preview, I must confess that I did kind of give short shrift to New York, largely because of what some of the things with the statistics were telling me. But they have hung around. They have really solidified themselves into an incredible nucleus there. And again, I wasn't necessarily seeing it in Brunson, and I kept thinking at some point maybe it was going to catch up to him and that it was going to be kind of exposed that he was a guy who started hot and it wasn't going to last. But, I mean, this is looking a lot more like, for lack of a better point of comparison, Harden's first year in Houston, you know, as far as really getting to kind of stand out. Brunson getting away from Luka Doncic, well, getting away from Luka Doncic never helps you to win games. Letting you become a lead guy, similar to what happened with Harden once he got away from the guys in Oklahoma City, it has given him the platform to show everything that he can do and that he can be the best player on a team that can go very far.
Right, and I think just in general, the situation that, you know, in making that sort of comparison for Jalen Brunson is that we always knew he had talent playing next to Luka Doncic, but you really never know what it was like in the totality of it, if it was just going to be him. And right now, at least with the Knicks, they've been sort of a weird team all season. They've had stretches where they've played really well, and then they've played in stretches that they've played really horribly. But they have the talent, and you still have a lot of guys on that roster that could muck up a series for Cleveland. So it's probably, in my opinion, the most interesting series on the board right now. But again, I don't necessarily know if the Knicks are going to be as consistent as they have been in years past.
Yeah, and for the Cavs, they have been one of the best teams in the league at home. Not as good on the road, so the clearest opportunities for the Knicks are going to be when they're at Madison Square Garden. But with a number of series that I see being very competitive and going very long in the East, ultimately I've got it down to Milwaukee and Boston in the East Finals. Is that how you see it shaking out?
I only have one little permutation. I have Milwaukee facing off against Philly.
Okay. All right, so you think they can take Boston. Interesting. Is it something about the particular matchup with them that makes you favor them?
I would argue I think the only reason I'm leaning that way is because I think the way that Harden has been playing right now, just being a sort of the counterpart to Embiid, and Embiid's playing at an MVP level. And I think this is like the Embiid I think a lot of us anticipated we were going to see after he came out of, after he came out of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
But then with all those injuries, we never really saw it. But you could see now that he's essentially become the focal point of that offense. And
yep.
I think this may be the best team that he's had around him so far.
I think so. It may very possibly be. And the one thing we do know at the conclusion of that series, whatever arena they're in, you will not be hearing chants of beat L.A., beat L.A. That's a very dated thing that's not coming back anytime soon. But as far as the Western Conference, speaking of L.A., you have the Clips in a very interesting 4-5 battle with Phoenix, and going to do so apparently without Paul George, at least at the outset, from something you sent me today. And you have the Lakers in the play-in round here. And I think in looking at this, a thing where most people sort of, you know, give a relatively easy edge, I would say, to the Lakers to make the cut there. But for neither team at Staples Center, is it going to be very easy in the first round if they end up making it there in the case of the Lakers?
Right, and it's kind of weird to think, Rick, because the Lakers were at 1.2-10 this season, that they're even in a situation for a legitimate playoff run. But again, Memphis, assuming that the Lakers win their play-in game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, Memphis is probably one of their better matchups. There will be without Brandon Clark and Steven Adams for their playoff run. So the one thing we know about Memphis at this time, excuse me, not Memphis, but the Lakers at this time, Rick, is that you have LeBron James, you have Anthony Davis, two guys who can go bang in the paint. And if Minnesota is missing their two best guys who could guard outside of Jaren Jackson Jr., that's going to be definitely impactful for the Lakers. And for the Clippers, they honestly feel like one of these teams that have been really above average all season. But I just find it very hard to conceive that Kawhi and this sort of roster is good enough to beat a Phoenix team if it's humming with Paul and Booker and Durant and Ayton.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they can push him to six because, like you said, Phoenix is still kind of coming
together.
They're
going to need Paul George if they're, you know.
Yeah, true. They're going to need him.
Make the series competitive.
That's true. They're going to need him back by the end of the series if they're going to push it to six. But meanwhile, something you and I were talking about also off air, the Battle of the Bay Area with Golden State and Sacramento here. This is a thing where, again, as a legitimate Golden State hater that I am, I hate to say it for Sacramento, but man, it's really looking like wrong place, wrong time. You break this long playoff jinx, you make it in there. Outside of being 25th in defensive rating, they are a statistical glory hound as far as the way that they've been putting it together. The stat people love Sacramento this year in so many different ways. But they're catching Golden State on a hot streak. You got a situation where, you know, a lot of the tick bros, all of the bandwagon fans from Golden State can probably look forward to go in and pay scalper prices in Sacramento and water down that home court advantage. So this is one of these things where, reluctantly, in my heart anyways, I am picking Golden State to win this one in seven games, but it could be pretty epic.
I'm going to say it really simply, Rick. I'm not going to make this long. I'm going to say Golden State in five.
In five?
Five, yeah.
Wow. I love the Nards on you, bro. all right. What makes you think?
I love Sacramento. They've been a fantastic story this entire season, but let's just be real, Rick. This is a different beast they're going to be dealing with in the first round of playoffs. And one thing I completely agree with you is that Golden State is going to water down that home court advantage for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was hearing somebody say today on one of these stations about, you know, Sacramento, it's a difficult barn to play in and everything like that. But, you know, once the bandwagon tech bros, for whom money is no object, start buying up those
tickets. And the one thing, too, and I was at the Blazer-Warrior game, like, Golden State fans, even if they are bandwagon fans, perceptionally to a lot of people, they do travel well.
Well, they travel well,
and it's gonna. And as you know, it's a lot cheaper to go to a game in Sacramento than it is to go to a game at Chase. So
yeah, I mean, you know.
And I also heard too, at least in what I've heard from other people, especially who are Sacramento fans, about when their last they recently played Golden State. I think it was on last week on Friday. And they essentially, it sounded like a Golden State home game.
Yeah. And with the proximity.
So especially in the playoffs, I know it's going to be a little more different if Sacramento goes on a road one. It just kind of feels like Golden State is doing what really good teams do, which is they kind of were lackadaisical for most of the season, and then they're starting to finally pick up right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
and again, we also do not know what the status of Andrew Wiggins is going to be for that series as well. So
well, that's true. He is supposed to be coming.
That could be a bigger thing. But my thing is that I kind of feel like Sacramento's going to come out in game one, be really hyped up, win game one easily, and then they're going to fall apart.
Okay.
That's what my thought is.
Well, that is going to be...
There would be no one happier than me to be wrong, Rick, but I'm calling it right now.
I'd be thrilled if you're wrong, and that's a series that I'll probably be watching a lot of just from the haters' perspective of wanting to see Golden State take it in the tuckus. We can always hope. Another series I think is going to go seven. I think the Lakers can stretch Memphis to that. I have Memphis taking it in the end, but how do you see that one playing out? It is when we talk about the previous era versus now, even though it was just in 2020 that the Lakers did it, as far as taking the title, LeBron, again, somebody that goes back, of course, to the 2000s as far as making the NBA Finals. So LeBron is emblematic of the old era. Memphis is emblematic of the new era, albeit they've been a little bit battle-tested making it in the playoffs the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think this is probably one of the more interesting series on paper if it does happen. Because again, Rick, we still have to rule. There is a scenario Minnesota wins the play-in tournament, the Lakers end up being the 8th seed.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely see the scenario. It's going to be an interesting series, like I noted from before, because of Memphis's injuries to their front court. And another thing in the totality of it is that Memphis is a really good team, but they've also gone through their own sense of turmoil this season. So we don't really know where their head's at right now.
Right.
And we don't know how they're going to, you know, live up to the issues that it's going to come from having a little bit of a weaker front court at the end of the day. But I tend to agree with you. I think Memphis will probably hold on and win. I do have a sinking suspicion the winner of the Sacramento Golden State series will probably beat Memphis in the second round if they do advance.
That's how I have it playing out as well. My conference finals, I have this being a pretty wild one here. I've got Phoenix over Denver in six, Golden State over Memphis in six. So I've got it being Phoenix and Golden State in the West Finals. How do you see it playing out?
I'm going to go, this is finally Denver's year, so I'll have Denver over Golden State finally after all these years.
Denver over Golden State, okay. From your lips to God's ears.
I think it's going to happen.
Well,
banking on one thing too, Rick, with that prediction is that Golden State's going to have a little bit more of a road to travel this year than Denver will.
Very possibly. And again, as we always talk about too, home court in a mile high city, teams have to deal with the altitude. That's part of the reason that I have Phoenix winning in six is that I wouldn't see them taking a game seven in Denver. So I think if they win it, it's going to be in six. So yes, I've got Phoenix over Golden State in seven in the West Finals. In the East Finals, I've got Milwaukee over Boston in six. You said you've got Milwaukee and Philly in the East Finals.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I'm going to lean towards the battle of MVPs. It's going to be Milwaukee-Denver. And I'm going to say it finally, Rick. I'm going to say it finally for the first time in a long time. The Denver Nuggets are actually going to win an NBA Finals for once.
Wow. And they could. They absolutely could. And this is one of the things that you and I have talked about off air is that, and again, there are a number of franchises, I guess, if you're looking at the big four sports in America, there's a number of franchises, I think, in the NHL that might be considered nondescript, especially some of the newer franchises. But if you just go MLB, NBA, NFL, you go back through the history of Denver and joining the NBA in the 76-70 season coming over from the ABA, there is a case to be made that Denver is the most nondescript team in any of the big three, if you want to call it, since then. Yeah, you know, guys like Dan Issel, and they had some glory days here, and Fat Lever, and a few things here and there. But as far as, like, Denver actually being on the radar in any kind of serious way, this run they've had with the Joker puts everything to shame going back to 76, because Denver has just basically been wallpaper for most of their time in the NBA.
Right, And outside of, we would make the argument outside of the late 80s with Issel and the run and gun offense of those Nuggets teams, and then
a little
the Carmelo
bit, little bit with Melo,
early on.
A little bit with Melo, but they never went that far.
It hasn't been really a big sort of changeover. The 90s and early 2000s were pretty much fair, outside of the year they beat the Sonics in 94, a very nondescript team.
Yes.
But this, again, and we've discussed this, Rick, this, if we had to make the argument, they are probably the best team in the league at this moment, outside of Milwaukee. The only other team I think you could even really argue with would be Milwaukee at this current time. And I kind of feel like, and we tend to forget about this with their home court advantage with Denver, with the altitude, as long as they kind of get what we would say in the game is kind of a very sort of healthy sort of, you know, sort of route to the finals on their end. If they essentially end up having to face Minnesota with their issues with Rudy Gobert and company and just being a little bit worse than last season, and then if their road, again, will depend on if they can beat Phoenix, but I do think they can. And I just feel like the Western Conference, it's one of those weird years where everyone's kind of bunched near the top, but Denver's clearly the best team. And as long as Denver kind of just, I think if they just stay the course and don't make any of their series way too hard for themselves, they should have a very high probability to get to the finals.
Interesting. I'm going with Phoenix just because of, again, the potentiality of it with Durant melding them in with Phoenix. You're going off of the concrete thing. So it's very interesting. I mean, it's two diametrically, you know, different points of view here. Because the potential of Phoenix.
And I think, too, Rick, just in general, it's like I would love to take Phoenix, too, just because offensively they're better than any team in the Western Conference. I just have a sinking suspicion that that time that Durant ended up missing around 10 to 12 games is going to impact them on some level.
Yeah. I think it's going to make it harder for them in their path. I do have them over Milwaukee in seven games in the finals.
Yeah. I mean, we'll note, too, Rick, I'm not ruling the Clippers out beating Phoenix either. It's just not likely.
I think it's not likely, and that's where, listen, I would so much rather that you're right than I am, because I kind of like that Denver team. I like the way that they play. Love the Joker. He's a very, very unique player. A lot of times I like unique spectacles in sports. I like guys who can do things that not everybody else can do. And now, again, Sabonis has sort of become a little bit of like a dollar store Jokic this year, right? So he's not the only big guy who's kind of playing that way at this point, but he's kind of brought it into the modern parlance. And again, you know, Phoenix is the king of potential. Nobody's got probably the upside that they do if they bring it together. Denver and Milwaukee, they're the concrete kings, I think, at this point. They're the teams that when you look at the track record, when you look at what they can do, if you're just going by that and you're putting upside aside, and I am, of course, an upside guy, but if you're putting upside aside, I think it would come down to Denver and Milwaukee.
I just think, too, Rick, if you also sort of look back in the history of the league since the 80s, the years where there was a lot of parity, the top teams usually made the finals.
Yes, could be. And the other thing is, too, this is very, very rare. Now, you look at a year that was kind of wide open. The two non-Jordan years in the 90s were pretty wide open. And in 95, when Houston won the title, defended their title with Clyde the Glide as a mid-season acquisition, I was trying to go back in history. I think that's the last time anybody did what Phoenix is trying to do. As far as getting a player that impactful at the deadline, and I think if we looked at the history of basketball, we'd probably say Durant even more so impactful than Drexler, all respect due to Clyde. But it's been a shockingly long period of time, Ben. It's been 28 years since a team made that kind of mega transaction at the trade deadline. Now, maybe it's just that we don't see too many mega transactions at the trade deadline. Those are very rare, but it's been 28
years. Yeah, and also we've discussed this too, Rick, especially within this sort of 24/7, 365 media age. The trade deadline was, at one point, I would say in the mid-90s, a complete afterthought.
Yes.
Like, the big deals were always made at the, you know, prior to the season or after the season.
Right.
And now it's a completely different world. And we're seeing this also now, too, about how, to switch sports for a second, how the NFL trade deadline has been impacted by this, too.
Yes.
Trade deadline, there were years where, in the 90s, I think trade deadline was pretty much a 10-minute discussion at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And now you have entire shows and websites dedicated to it at this point.
That's true.
It's a different world, and it's going to be very interesting because Phoenix definitely has to be the most interesting story out there.
Yes. Oh, they do. They do. And but again, just looking at the concrete of it, and again, your picks, Denver and Milwaukee. If you're just looking at track records, then I think, yes, you would say that, and particularly with Milwaukee and Boston, not just in terms of record, but really I think in terms of being the best team in the East, sort of ships crossing in the night in the Eastern Conference in the second half of the season. Not super dramatic, not to the degree to which Boston can't give them a really good series if it comes down to it, but it's the thing where we go back to last year. Boston has yet to prove that they can beat a Milwaukee team with Chris Middleton in the lineup. They didn't do it last year.
Right, and again, Middleton is still coming back. But again, I do think Milwaukee's a little more battle-tested this year and in comparison. And then, again, to remember, Boston's doing the exact opposite of what they did last year, which was they started out slow and then they incline.
Yep.
And this year they started up fast and now they're declining a little bit.
Yep.
I still really like Boston. I'd be totally shocked if it wasn't one of those three teams in the Eastern Conference Finals. I know Cleveland's definitely up there. I just kind of feel like if Cleveland's path was a little bit easier for them, I feel like they would have had a better chance.
Yeah.
But, again, I won't rule them out entirely. It's just it kind of feels like it's going to be kind of inevitable between the top three in the Eastern Conference and whoever comes out of the West at this pace. And, again, too, my thing, too, is that it's also a match of the league, because let's be brutally honest, Milwaukee-Denver is not sexy on paper in terms of, like, the teams and the locations, because I'll be brutally honest, I don't think most of the nation cares about a Denver-Milwaukee final, but the league always is a fan of having big-name stars face each other, and having a Giannis versus Jokic final would definitely be on the meter right there.
Oh, it definitely would be, because along with Embiid, you've got the three leading candidates for MVP this year. So you get two of the three in the final, and I think that would go a long way towards negating that. Because like you said, in terms of the markets involved and everything like that, there would be a little bit of a dip, but I agree. I don't think it would be super dramatic, because like you said, Greek Freak and the Joker, you're going to have a good amount of interest even from the casuals, I would say, on that. So look forward to seeing how this plays out. Hope to convene with you again before the NBA Finals, as we often do. In fact, I know we're going to have to make a point of it, because you have, as we keep saying, an undefeated streak in the NBA Finals going all the way back to 2015, my man. We got to see if you can keep this thing going.
We'll see if it continues.
You've gotten eight in a row.
You would assume at some point I have to be wrong, right? By default.
You've gotten eight in a row. And by the way, in looking at it, I mean, I think I've been 6-2 during that stretch. So it's like, yeah. Under normal circumstances, I could pat myself on the back. Hey, 6-2, whatever. But I just happen to be with the guy that's 8-0 during that entire stretch. Interesting that of the four Golden State Cavs finals, you and I both got all four of those right. We were right every time out. On those ones. And then the one where you really went against the grain, you took Toronto in 2019, which was very impressive. And then you and I split in 2021. I picked Phoenix over Milwaukee at that time as well. You picked Milwaukee over Phoenix. So you have been very strong looking at this throughout.
Right. And it's we'll get to that point, and it's going to be very interesting. But hopefully this season we'll have a more memorable playoffs than in the last 2 years, which have been kind of wonky from some of the earlier rounds. So hopefully we'll get some good first round matchups.
Well, normally I would say the NBA kind of gets, at least quality-wise, if not media-wise, overshadowed by the Stanley Cup playoffs in the early rounds. I don't see that happening this year. I think the NBA is going to be going very strong even in the early rounds, at least with a couple of these series, and it'll be fun to watch throughout. Thank you so much, Ben Chu. Appreciate you being here for this one. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1607.